Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on the award-winning Close Up Radio Live. This is your host, Jim Masters, and it's a pleasure to continue our extraordinary series with Dr. Michael Armour. For decades, Dr. Mike, as he's affectionately known and popularly known, he has literally compiled an exceptional leadership record in far-ranging fields of endeavor. Multidimensional achiever, as we've mentioned on previous episodes, and that consistently puts him in demand as an executive coach, business advisor, trainer focused on management, leadership, cultural transformation. He also holds a PhD from UCLA, among other degrees, and he has been honored for both the work he did in past capacities, but also what he does at his flagship company, Strategic Leadership Development International. He's discussing being engaging, having authoritative knowledge, past successes, and other aspects of influence that are essential to sound leadership. And this is really a step-by-step guide through the seven avenues of influence, talking about strategies for building up one's influence as well. That's the central theme, which is also in the title of his best-selling book, which, of course, is Trust. Dr. Michael Armour issued the second edition of Leadership and the Power of Trust in 2020. The original was 2008, and it rapidly rose to the top of Amazon's chart. In the course of his career, he has literally coached hundreds of executives and managers, entrepreneurs, and trained people across four continents. And he's spoken before nearly, well, hundreds and hundreds of corporate audiences. And at one time, you know, he was even involved in the clergy. He's really touched all aspects of life, which makes him a great leader himself as well. That's why he can relate to his clients. He's in Dallas, Texas, but has clients all over. And we're very excited to welcome him back as we continue our series today on Close Up Radio Live. Dr. Mike, welcome back to the program. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Jim. I hope things are going well with you and you're having a great day.
Absolutely. You know, last week we discussed the reasons why every person needs to maximize his or her influence, and you listed avenues along with which we build influence. For the benefit of anyone who, you know, may have missed that program, could you list those again?
Sure. And as I said last week, this is not an exhaustive list, but it's a fairly comprehensive roadmap. Fundamentally, we are influenced, or we build influence by gaining trust, by maintaining a stellar reputation, by being perceived as one whose knowledge or know-how is authoritative, having an engaging presence, communicating with clarity, being likable, or compiling a track record of success.
So when that's like you say, that's not as long a list as you would think, right? That's it's very concise.
Well, but under each of those headings, I could spell out a number of subheads, so the list can get very long. But the fact of the matter is that influence is the way that we bring someone else to agree with our viewpoint or our preferences or what we need them to provide for us. It's a way of winning people over. And as the marketing world knows, there are only a handful of ways that we get a message across in such a manner that it wins people over. And though this list is reasonably short, it's not too different from the list that marketers and advertisers use to gain the purchase of their product or service.
I noticed that you started off the list with something very important, trust. And it's not really surprising since you spent so much of your life researching and writing and keynoting about trust as well. Were there other considerations that led you really to putting that at the top of your list?
Any discussion of influence must begin with trust. It's the most powerful influencing agent at our disposal. Or to put it another way, we have little chance of influencing people who distrust us. Influence, we have said, is the process by which our thoughts, ideas, and recommendations flow into the lives of others. Distrust stands as a barrier which blocks that flow. There's no sure way to gain trust, but there are surefire ways to lose it. All that's required is for us to act in such a way that makes us appear untrustworthy, and there are a myriad of measures that people use to determine if we are trustworthy. So to the best of our ability, our goal must be consistently manifest trustworthiness in our words and actions. That's imperative for anyone who wants to expand his or her influence. And that's why I examined trust building so thoroughly in my book, Leadership and the Power of Trust. Over the course of that book, I explore 14 different elements that go into being trusted and into maintaining that trust.
It's very, very important on many different levels. You know, the second thing on your list is maintaining a stellar reputation. If you can expand and give us your thoughts on that, Dr. Mike.
The word reputation literally means what you are reputed to be. Reputation is the way that people picture us. Ideally, we would have influence because people trust us. But for genuine trust to form, we need extended experience with a person. Many of the people with whom we interact on a daily basis have not yet had that depth of experience with us. They will therefore judge us on the basis of our reputation, what they've heard others say about us. This is why we must guard our reputation and keep it in good repair. In situations where trust does not yet exist, people will fall back on using our reputation to gauge their willingness to yield to our influence. Unfortunately, reputation is a fragile thing. Warren Buffett once said, "It takes 20 years to build a reputation and 10 minutes to destroy it." That's why building trust creates more enduring influence than building a stellar reputation. Trust is not so easily shattered as a reputation. When people truly trust us, they will make allowances for occasional missteps or mistakes or shortcomings. But if our influence relies entirely on reputation, those miscues can be enough to undo a well-built reputation and wipe out our influence. Not only that, reputations are easily besmirched by those who've pitted themselves against us. What's the first line of attack in many political campaigns? Attacking the opponent's reputation, whether it's a reputation for character, for business acumen, or even basic human decency. Those who would undercut our influence have a steep hill to climb if our influence is based on depth of trust. It's a less challenging hill if our influence rests entirely on our reputation. Unfortunately, and unwisely, I might add, millions of people are more preoccupied with building a glowing reputation than with building trust. Americans are obsessed with projecting the right image, so obsessed that we have now entire industries devoted to image building. And reputation can be a powerful source of influence. So I'm not suggesting that we downplay it. To the contrary, we ought to keep it as untarnished as possible. But at the same time, we can't afford to become so focused on image building and reputation that we neglect the more vital priority of developing trust.
That's really incredible. And it's so true. And they sort of play off each other so beautifully. I mean, you just sort of have that stellar reputation when you develop and maintain trust, for sure, and vice versa. You know, as we count down the list, the third item, being perceived as having authoritative knowledge and know-how, what are your thoughts on how authority figures into one's influence?
We speak of people who have authority and of people who are an authority. Influence depends not so much on having authority, but on being an authority in the minds of others. When people have authority, they also have the power to compel. They don't have to rely on influence to get things done. Therefore, people who have authority may not feel the urgency to practice influence building. They can simply order what they want done, and it is done. They don't have to persuade through their influence. On the other hand, as I pointed out last week, when we don't have the power to compel, we have to rely on influence to gain what we want from others. And one of the most powerful ways to build influence is to be viewed as being an authority on what we're talking about. In most societies, American culture is a noted exception, we see the power of being an authority in the respectful, almost reverential regard in which the elderly are held. America worships youth. It tries to do right by its oldest generations, to be sure, but fundamentally, American culture sidelines them. Older generations are widely viewed as no longer having anything relevant to say. Their viewpoints are outdated. Their know-how outmoded. But that's not the way it is elsewhere on the globe. In Asia and Africa in particular, the older generation is seen as having lived long enough to be a storehouse of wisdom and knowledge. Whether they have authority or not, they are viewed as being authorities. I remember when I first encountered this in Asia, I was in my late 20s and asked to make a series of leadership presentations to several hundred people at a college in Seoul, Korea. Two-thirds of my audience were men in their mid-40s or younger. They listened attentively to each of my presentations and took copious notes. But I noticed that during breaks, they all rushed to the older people in the room. It seemed that every elderly man in the audience was surrounded throughout the breaks by a crush of young people seeking the man's opinion on what I had said. No matter how persuasively I had made my case, it was not readily accepted unless the elders agreed with me. Before long, I was no longer gearing my message for the younger part of the room, but the older portion. If I didn't connect with them and persuade them, my influence was not strong enough to win the assent of the younger two-thirds of my audience. As this example illustrates, when you are seen as being an authority on a given topic or solution, you're more likely to influence people's thinking about those issues. In addition, once you are recognized as an authority in two or three areas, people will commonly assume that you are also an authority in other areas. I call it a halo effect. When you demonstrate your authoritative knowledge in multiple fields, your authority generalizes to give you influence in still other fields. Many so-called influencers on the internet use being an authority as their primary vehicle for creating influence. They start a blog or a newspaper or a podcast or video. They load up video tutorials on YouTube on some set of topics on which they are particularly knowledgeable. They attract followers who are interested in these same topics. And once they have a large following established, they come to be perceived as an authority in that arena. Later, many of these influencers will branch out to other fields. And because they are already viewed as an authority in their original field, they are able to build a following more quickly in the new field because their authority has a bleed-over effect, that halo effect to which I referred. People presume that with the perceived authority which the influencer has already achieved, the influencer must be authoritative in this new field of endeavor. So if you want to maximize your influence, focus more on being authoritative than having authority. Being an authority is what gives you genuine influence.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely. The other thing, too, is engaging presence. The fourth item on your list is an engaging presence. How do you define that? Tell us more about that.
It has long been known that tall people tend to build influence more quickly than short people. Isn't that interesting?
That's why platform shoes have been so popular and they sell out.
That's
the business to be in.
There you go. That principle is true up to a point. There is a point at which great height becomes intimidating to others and thus lessens influence. One of the most memorable moments in my life was when Patrick Ewing was finishing his career at Georgetown University in Washington. And I was flying out of Washington one day, having been there on Navy duty and taking a flight to Chicago. And Ewing happened to be boarding the same flight. I didn't know that. But as I was walking down the entryway to the plane, caught the sensation that there was a belt buckle just to the right of my eyes. And I thought, no, there can't be a belt buckle to the right of my eyes. And I turned, and it was him. Sure enough, there was a belt buckle right to the right of my eyes. And so just to make small talk with him, I said, well, do you know what seat you're in? And I'll never forget his answer because I had never thought about this problem for very tall people. He said, I always know what seat I'm in. And I said, why is that? He said, because my legs are so long, there's only one seat in the plane I can sit in. And that's in first class on the aisle seat on the front row that allows me to stretch my legs into the galley area. Because my legs even dig my knees into the bulkhead in first class. So he said, if I can't get that seat, I don't make the flight. So someone who is that tall is a little bit intimidating to people. So within reason, height isn't a big difference maker. But going back to my point, the way that our bodies present themselves does have an impact on influence. Physical profiles, what we do with our body, our mannerisms, all of that is going to impact our influence building capacity. We can't do much about our height, of course. Patrick Ewing is as tall as Patrick Ewing is. In fact, I don't know if you remember a book from 30 years ago, I think it was, by maybe nearly 40 years now, by a fellow named John Malloy called Dress for Success. And one of the things he talked about in the book was the things that former athletes, particularly NFL and NBA athletes, had learned to do when they went into sales and marketing and executive positions to disarm the fact that they were so intimidating that they lost influence. And he said to a CEO he was consulting with, you know, these very large athletes, when they come into business, have to find all kinds of tricks to keep from being intimidating and thus losing influence. And the CEO said, well, I don't believe that. I've got this one salesman who is a former NBA player. He's very tall, very big, and he's our best salesman. These tall people can have lots of influence. And Malloy said, well, he has found some way to disarm the intimidation of his height. And the man said, I don't think so. And Malloy said, well, call him in. So the fellow came in and they posed to him what Malloy had said. And as soon as Malloy explained his theory, the guy said, oh, yes, yeah, I do that. And they said, how? And he said, well, I'll show you. And he went to his office and he got his attaché case, day when people still carried briefcases around with them. And he said, when I walk into the room to meet with someone for the first time, I'm holding the case in my hand, but with two fingers, I'm holding the lid shut because I've got the thing unsnapped. And as I approach and I'm about to shake hands with them, I release my fingers and the attaché case falls open and the papers fall out of it and I have to get down on my knees and gather them up. And he said, by getting down on my knees, I disarm that intimidating presence. So a really bright guy, but that illustrates what I'm talking about. Height builds credibility to a certain point and then it loses credibility. But that's true with everything about our bodies. We can't do much about our height, but in terms of being influential, that's not important. The main thing that we do physically to enhance our influence is to have an engaging presence, starting with maintaining warm eye contact. Rightly or wrongly, our society has a prejudice against anyone who is reluctant to make eye contact. In fact, the term shifty-eyed is one of the most derisive descriptions that we can make about anyone. People generally presume that hesitant eye contact is an indication of shame, guilt, dishonesty, or an attempt to deceive. None of those perceptions enhances personal influence. An engaging presence, then, begins with the projection of confidence, and warm eye contact starts that process. Speaking with enthusiasm and energetic gestures adds to it. And strangely enough, listening more than we speak makes us particularly engaging as a conversationalist, especially when we listen with undivided attention. But we don't have to be physically present to have an engaging presence. Earlier, we were talking about influencers. Many of them earned that title through blogging or podcasts, neither of which gives them an opportunity to make warm, engaging eye contact. But they are successful in building influence nonetheless because they project an engaged interest in their audience. They show genuine interest in what concerns their followers. They never talk down or condescendingly to them or about them. They treat questions from their followers with respect. Beyond that, they are open and transparent with their followers as though they and their followers are close personal friends, in spite of the fact that the influencer has never met the vast majority of his or her followers. Their followers reciprocate by bonding with the influencer, whose influence thereby grows even stronger. Very few of us, of course, will ever be influencers or even want to be, but we can learn from influencers how to build engaging presence, whether in person or remotely. When we communicate with and treat others the way that skilled influencers communicate with and treat their followers, we will build engaged presence.
And that's encouraging to know, yeah, on so many different levels. So many great things we're talking about, trust and stellar reputation and engaging presence and so much more. We've talked about four avenues for creating influence. And unfortunately, these 30 minutes go by so quickly, Dr. Mike. I presume that, you know, we'll address the other items next week. Why not give us maybe a preview of some of the others if you can?
We've got three more on our list that we haven't had time to get to today. The sequence in which we will take them up next week is such that we'll begin by talking about clarity of communication. You know, Jim, that clarity is very important to me. I define my life purpose as helping people succeed by giving them clarity and insight. And I lead that list off with the word clarity, because if we don't have clarity in what we're thinking, then the insight we derive may be inappropriate or even dangerous. And so one of the ways we build influence is by having clear communication, so that there's no mistaking or putting an influence-harming interpretation on what we say. Since influence is a persuasive process, communication is at the heart of it. Clear communication is the engine that drives the influence that comes from our communication. Then the second thing we'll talk about next week is being likable. Most of us are not inclined to genuinely listen to someone whom we don't like. Likability is thus a major factor in expanding our influence. And then finally, the third thing we will touch on next week is having a track record of success in some respected field of endeavor. And I'm not talking here so much about celebrity success. I'm talking about the kind of success a Warren Buffett has had in the field of investing and finance, or that other people who are frequently quoted in the serious press have established in some field. They are so successful that people want to hear from them the secrets that got them to where they are, or the secrets that they are using to perpetuate their success, so that people that are listening can borrow from that knowledge. That kind of success is sort of another variant of what we talked about a while ago of having knowledge and know-how. So those are the three we'll take up next week: clarity of communication, likability, and a record of success in some respected field of endeavor.
And if folks want to make contact, what's the best way to do that and to also get a copy of your book?
The book is available on Amazon. As I have mentioned in the past when we touched on the availability of the book, it's important if you look for it on Amazon to be sure that you search for the second edition, Leadership and the Power of Trust, the second edition. because the first edition was very successful, and a lot of people are selling first editions on Amazon. And if you just do a search on the title, you might end up with the first one, unless you're paying careful attention to the cover. The first edition has a white cover, rather plain cover with a blue trim. The second edition has a picture of the globe as seen from outer space and is quite colorful. So it's easy to contrast the two. Either one would be very helpful, but the second edition is more up-to-date in its statistics, and I bring some of my thoughts to a fuller explanation in it. For those who are interested in the leadership development services that I and the colleagues that I have on my team provide, the website is leaderperfect.com. I'm actually in the process this month of adding 6 new team members to my team, so we can offer an even broader array of services than I've been able to in the past. These are very capable, very talented people, and I'm really excited about the potential they're bringing to the organization. And then finally, my keynoting website is keynotesandmore.com, a place to go if you've got some special event that I might help you with by delivering a presentation in either a keynote form or in a training environment.
Dr. Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks for stopping by the show again as we continue this extraordinary series, and looking forward to more next week. It'll be a pleasure.
I will look forward to it. Always do.
Absolutely. You have a good week, and thanks for stopping by the show. And also leaderperfect.com. Check that out. Our very special guest, Dr. Michael Armour. This is Jim Masters thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, stay tuned. I'll be back in less than 30 minutes with another incredible guest right here on Close Up Radio Live. Till then, for all of us, have a great day. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.